When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Manners Masterclass, my special interview series where I go one-on-one with a cricket legend. And I am so thrilled to have this former cricketer with me. I was going to do a normal cricket unfiltered with this guy, but then I was thinking, how many fucking times can you talk about should Steve Smith be opening the batting? So scrap that. And instead, we're going to take a journey through Stephen O'Keefe's career. He has done it all. He's won Sheffield Shields. He's won the Big Bash. He's won the One Day Domestic Cup. He's won Test matches in India. He's an absolute gun. He's also now a media darling. He's pretty much on every network you can think of. Stephen O'Keefe, welcome to Manners Masterclass.
Manners, you know, in the twilight years of my cricketing career, it's a pleasure to finally round it out speaking to you. Also engaged, would like to let you know as well, to the lovely Lexi Cartwright. So, my life is fulfilled. I have, you know, the beautiful wife, the great career that I could look back on, and now I get to chat to you to finish it all, you know, just round it all out.
So, I thought we were engaged for a minute there. I was like, steady on.
I could do worse. I could do worse.
Same.
And you could do a whole lot better.
thanks for coming on. That's great news about the engagement. So now you can, you know, saunter off into retirement. Lovely lady in tow, a new life ahead of you. You must be feeling pretty good.
I do. I've got, besides having COVID at the moment, I feel really good, Manners. I spoke to you at the start of the Big Bash season this year and let you know that you were the first to know that was going to be my last season. I basically let you know first and... Mate, I feel really fulfilled. Had a great
It did make me realise that clearly none of your Sixers teammates listened to that interview because they were all taken by surprise when you announced your retirement a couple of months later.
Yeah, I think it was the old boy who cried wolf, you know, because I'd said it every year. I think it was sort of like just jumping, expecting. I think when I first got sacked from the Blues, I was always anticipating that maybe it would happen without me knowing. So I thought, oh, God, I better say it first before it happened. So I was sort of saying it every year and then it just sort of, you know, kept carrying on for the next 3 or 4 years. But I was fortunate to keep playing and I'm glad that it finished the way that it did. You know, a bittersweet. I wish we would have won, but... you know, I had my whole family there. We were able to get them into a box. It was a home final. Couldn't have predicted that. You know, after round two of the season, I basically said I was done. I told Moe, Shippy that, you know, I'd finished up my cricket. But we ended up hosting a home final in the Big Bash. I just wish we'd won it, but, you know, it just wasn't meant to be. And you know, the Heat were the better team on the day, but, you know, I got to finish my career at home, so it was great.
I was obviously at that final, and I saw you afterwards. You were gutted, but the crowd embraced you. They were cheering you the whole game. You know, as I said, I know it wasn't the result you wanted, but you know, it was still a magic night for you to be able to go out on your home ground, go out in a final. sure you would have loved to have won it, but still, you know, I think you'll reflect on it pretty well over the years.
I was so surprised, actually, to be honest, Manners. I actually didn't know how to react, you know, knowing I bowled my last ball and the crowd responded by, you know, giving me a great, you know, clap and all the rest of it. I was really taken aback by it all. And, you know, I really was quite emotional. I think the emotions of the day really did get the better of me, and I think maybe of the team as well. We always talk about sort of keeping calm, but, I think there's a lot of pressure as a team when you go out into finals like that in front of a home crowd. There's a lot of expectation. I think when you're the underdog walking into that environment, you know, there's less expectation and, you know, they just got the hop on us. You know, but personally speaking, mate, just so happy, really fulfilled. You know, 20 years, you know, I've been playing cricket since I was 8. You know, mum got me into sport as a youngster just so I could sort of meet some new friends. And from the first time I bowled a ball and smelled leather and hit one out of the middle, I just fell in love with cricket, you know.
But unfortunately, I'm still looking for the friends. So, you know.
That's right. No friends. Still love the smell of the leather and the sound of, you know, hitting one out of the middle occasionally.
Absolutely. Well, I want to get into where it all started for you, but this episode of Manners Masterclass is brought to you by NordVPN, and you can get a special deal if you head to nordvpn.com/cricketunfiltered. And this will be very useful for my guests now because, you know, if you want your browsing history to be private and for no one else to see what you're Googling, then NordVPN is perfect for you. Sock's got his hand up there. You know, with the increase of cybercrime and all sorts of stuff, it's never been more important to protect
you. Need it.
Absolutely.
You need it.
If you go to nordvpn.com/cricketunfiltered, you get a 30-day money-back guarantee. You also get a great deal on 2 years of the service. And for cricket fans, it's perfect because if you're traveling, you can switch your virtual location and watch the cricket wherever you are. So you'll never miss a ball and you will sleep easy knowing your browsing data is safe. So if you're a fan of the show, please check it out. It'd be a big help. They're great supporters of the show. And check out nordvpn.com/cricketunfiltered.
Easy.
My excellent Love stuff. It. Yeah, check that I'm out. On board. Yeah, check that I'm out. On board. You'll need it. Honestly, you'll need it. So we'll go back to the media. I just want to look at, just read out to the listeners your fantastic playing record now that it's complete. 9 test matches, 35 wickets, and an average of 29.4, an economy 2.77. So not even the test batters could get hold of you. Strike rate 63.6. It's still very good. T20 internationals, played 7 for Australia, took 6 wickets. First class, 88 matches, probably 20 or 30 short there than what it should have been. 301 wickets at 24.66. That is a phenomenal record. List A, one day international, List A domestic cricket, 30 wickets and an average.
Yeah, don't worry about the average. Don't worry about the average. Yeah,
I thought it was your batting average, 60. Wow, what happened? I was going to ask you later on in the podcast why you never got picked for one day cricket, but now I can see why. And then T20s for the Sixers and New South Wales, 119 wickets and an average of 23, an economy in T20 cricket of 6.7. I recently was speaking to Alex Ross from the Sydney Thunder, who was on this podcast, and he said you were the hardest spinner to hit in the Big Bash, even at the end. So you went out on top.
What a lovely indictment, because I found him one of the hardest blokes to bowl to. I remember playing shield cricket against him and he just swept. When a batter sweeps you as well as he can, it is just so hard to play.
Mm.
You know, he gives a lot of teams headaches because when you're setting fields, you know, the sweep shot is one shot that you find really hard to set fields to because, you know, you have a backward square, but how backward square, forward square, reverse sweep, and he was really good at all of them. So if, you know, you couldn't get him out in his first few balls, you knew you were in for a bloody long day. Because he could punish you really hard, square the wicket. So,
well, he found it difficult facing you. And I shouldn't actually go past your batting record. In first-class cricket, average over 25, that's really good. 12 half centuries, high score of 99.
I was good early doors, Manners, and then it just faded very, very quickly. And a lot of those
I was going to say that.
It's flattered by a lot of not-outs. So I early on I prided myself in batting, but as I got older, I just found like my niche in bowling and really focused hard on it, and batting I just confused it and did the opposite. Like bowling, really had a steady approach to it, knew what I wanted to do. Batting just confused the hell out of it, and it just got worse as I got older. Unfortunately, you find other blokes get older and they get better with their batting. Me, complete reverse. Just ended up resenting batting. Just hated it. You know, finished my career batting 11 at the Hawks in first grade. So, sucked at it. Sucked.
It cannot be easy batting at first class level. You're up against the best bowlers in the country. So if you are struggling, you're not going to find it easy.
First class cricket, yes. What I found the hardest, and obviously people will say test cricket, but like I only ever had really one extended tour against one team. And when you play against one team, if there's any cracks in your game, you can't escape. So if it's like one game, then it's two games. You play these people, India, in my case, four times over. So,
2017.
Yeah. And you just keep playing them over and over and over again. It's just relentless. So you don't really have a chance. You've got to learn on the job. And if you don't, they'll just get the wood over you.
You were into the verbal so much. Like you would have copped it from the fast bowlers when you came out to bat for the Blues. They would have been like, there's a target on this bloke. I'm aiming for the badge right now.
It's always spinners, but, I gave as good as I got, and I used to give a lot of verbal when I bowled. So when I came out to bat, I copped it from, everyone. I remember Jadeja knocking me over and then giving the old, one of those ones to the crowd as he'd shut up, and fair enough too, because I couldn't hit him off the square.
One of my mates was covering a Shield game like 10, 11 years ago, and he rang me afterwards and he said, "Mate, that sock, he just does not shut up." Like they were, you're at a Bankstown or something, so you can hear everything. He said, "Sock was talking all day in the field."
I think some people, your team might appreciate it, but I think, it sort of kept me going, kept me engaged. It was more of a me thing to try and, keep me in the contest, keep me focused, keep me connected to the group. So I was always, talking, trying to stay upbeat. A lot of it's just garbage, some teams appreciate it because it just shows a bit of energy. You run through, you're always talking, you're trying to find holes in weaknesses, blah, blah, blah. It just got me going. That was my thing. Not every team has it. Not every individual has it, but it's just something that, I did during my career and got me going. I remember as a bloody 14-year-old kid, that's what I used to do. So it never changed, really.
Yeah, I heard Matt Wade recently talking about how it kept him engaged in the game. Like he needed that kind of contest to keep him in the game. I mean, who were some of the players that you used to like really battle with at state level?
Well, Matty Wade was always one who, you'd walk out and you knew you were going to get into a contest. You'd lose sleep at night sometimes knowing that, geez, I'm coming up against Vix or, Tassie or wherever he was playing, and you knew Matty Wade. And I went to the academy with him, so I roomed with him, so I knew what he was like. But he's one of those blokes you would love to have in your team. when you're coming up against him, you found it really, really difficult because he was just, they would find cracks. Cameron White, very, very good. I just found the whole Victorian team were very good at trying to dismantle you, you know, mentally whenever you played a game of cricket. And, you know, they had the wood, they still have the wood over the New South Wales cricket team, I think. You know, from years and years, they just have a mental edge. And I think it's born from the Greg Shipper days of old with Andrew McDonald and Robert Quiney and Matthew Wade and, you know, who's the opener, left-handed opener, Bucky Rogers. You know, these guys would just wear you down, Dave Hussey, and then they'll bully you. And, you know, you found it really hard to come back from. And I still think it shows. You know, I think New South Wales' record against Victoria is quite poor. And I think a lot of it's got to do with the mental capability. You know, they just keep reloading, whether it be batters or bowlers. You know, they went through Pattinson, Siddle, Hastings, and then they can recharge now with Perry and Boland, and, you know, they still just keep applying pressure. So the mental.
Any other players, though, you remember that you just used to really niggle with?
I used to get into nothing that really comes to mind. I'm trying to think. Nothing that comes to mind, but I would always try and pick a fight with a lot of players. If I felt like I had an edge over them, then I would really try and give it to them. Or generally, if I thought someone was, you know, actually quite good, I would just try and get them off their game. So it was every player. And I always found every player hard to bloody bowl to. Part of my game was, you know, trying to distract you just for one ball. I always believe, man, is that one ball, if I could get you just off your game for one ball, you know, make you play the wrong line and hit your knee roll because I'm always hitting the stumps, then, you know, that's it. That's all I had to win was that small contest. So if you're then on the strike, just have a little verbal, you know. Yeah. You're at the other end, oh, geez, you know, are you playing the right line there? Oh, let's move cover here. Let's do that. It's almost this dance. And Greg Matthews always talked about that. Everything you needed to do was deliberate. Field settings, bowl a full toss, you meant to bowl it. You know, just present this image that you always knew what you were doing. And it takes a bit of time to learn and to do that. But, you know, that was something that I just enjoyed doing.
Because we all grew up watching, you know, the great Shane Warne, and he was so theatrical, and he would do that. Everything was deliberate. He would, you know, stop the game and have a chat to heels, and probably wasn't even about cricket, about what they were having for dinner, but yeah. Just wanted to get the batsman thinking. You know, there was we grew up watching that great theatre. So speaking of Mo Matthews, I've been watching a lot of Cricket Gold, and Greg Matthews is a prominent part.
Oh, my. Yeah, I remember I only a couple of nights ago rang Ray Bright because it was like Bob Holland, Ray Bright, Greg Matthews playing New Zealand at the SCG. Dave Gilbert played as well. And I rang Dave Gilbert, you know, all these guys who were just great custodians of the game. And, you know, Ray obviously didn't pick the phone call up because it was 11 o'clock at night. But he said, hey, Sock, everything all right? And I just wrote back and said, hey, mate, just watching you bowl at the SCG, just wanted to let you know they're coming out beautifully. you know, a lot of respect for these guys who, you know, who set the platform for the rest of us. And, you know, Ray Bright, as a left-arm finger spinner, took 60-plus test wickets, but there's not been too many. Well, he would be the best left-arm finger spinner, you know, that I can think of in recent times. It's taken over 50 wickets. The rest have all been offies or leggies, you know. So, yeah, anyway, you know, it was cool to watch him bowl. Bob Holland, who's, you know, he was 40 at the time bowling as well, and Greg Matthews was sort of batting 6 and 7, and he was the third spinner in, but in his own right, you know, top two Shield leading wicket takers for New South Wales, like legend of the game. So,
There is a real brotherhood of spinners at New South Wales cricket, isn't there? Because of the storied history of it being the home for spinners in Australia.
Yeah.
there is a sort of real connection between you all. When you came in, McGiller was still playing, but you know, it's a very tight knit community, isn't it? The spinners.
I think so, and I think one of the great pleasures I had when I came through is they were very giving of their knowledge. So Dave Freeman, you know, very giving. He was the selector and sort of coach as I was coming through my underage group. Greg Matthews, you know, he would just give you so much time. Stuart McGill was just amazing. So I learned a lot off them, watching them play. And then when I came through, you know, it was those three guys plus Bo Casson, plus Nathan Horitz, plus Aaron O'Brien. Did I say Jason Crazier? You know,
no,
yeah. Crazy. So there's like, you know, five or six guys that I was watching bowl and learn, and everyone understood they had one spot to play for as a spinner in a team, but they were very, very giving. And I think that's where the brotherhood comes from, is that you just want to see everyone do well and you want to pass that, you know, energy and knowledge on. And I was really fortunate to come up through that. It took me 4 years in between first-class games, 4 or 5 years to get my first game, my second game. Yeah. You know, but during that time, I got to learn off Nathan Horitz and Bo Casson. You know, I got to watch Stuart McGill, you know, apply his craft. I got to watch Aaron O'Brien be an all-rounder at his game. I got to watch Jason Crazier bowl the perfect off-spinner. You know, the ball never met an offie that the ball hasn't left his hand better than his in the world, you know. And I've watched Gaz bowl, you know, he's so consistent. But Jason Crazier, wow, when it landed perfectly, just incredible. You know, so I got to watch these guys, you know, play, and, you know, they all impacted me in my career. And, you know, I got to play 80-odd games, and I'm grateful, but they all helped in their own certain way.
Yeah, I can vouch for a lot of that. And even Greg Matthews, David Friedman, they all tried to help me out. Coaching, and it didn't work as well as it did with you, but they tried their best. Just before we take a quick break, I wanted to ask you, we were talking about I was a terrible off spinner, but I did, and like you, I used to just speak, and people who listen to this podcast will be not surprised. I used to just rely on the verbal to get wickets, like just say, come on, mate, see how far can you hit me. And one out of five times it wouldn't work at the level I was playing.
You get it. You get it, man. As you've got it. You've got it. That's me summed up. That's exactly how it worked.
Yeah. Except the one day when I kept saying it to this guy, oh, how far can you hit me? And he just kept hitting me into the next.
I'll show you. Yeah.
And he kept showing me. Just one last thing before break. With the sledging, you started in 05 break, but have you noticed a difference? Because I think there's been a cultural change, and, you know, sledging and getting into players, it's still there, but is it different to what it was when you came into the game?
I think so. I think the game's cracked down on it, and so it should. I think it was really nasty. I think at times, as when I started out, it was really personal and ugly, and there's just no real need for it, I don't think. You know, and unfortunately I bought into that at times as well. You know, I got really personal, and I'm a bit embarrassed about some of the stuff that I would have said on a cricket field. There's no right for it. You know, you can get in a player's head, but you don't have to, you know, really attack them. And I think it has softened and changed, and I think they're stamping down on it, which is the right thing to do. I think, you know, it's a contest between bat and ball. You can mentally get into guys' heads by moving fields and saying stuff, you know, going into personal stuff and, you know.
Well, that was mental disintegration. That was the term, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was the Steve Waugh sort of mentality that, you know, if you get ahead, you just bury them. And you can do that just by, you know, batting well or bowling well. You didn't need to do it verbally. But occasionally, you know, well, I, as I said, I'm ashamed to admit it, but, you know, I would have crossed the line a couple of times in what I'd said. And, you know, I would now look back on it and I go, oh, God, I'm sorry about, you know, that situation. But you sort of get into a space where it's like me versus you, and, you know, at the end of the day, you you're really competing for your job and your life, and that's how I took it. So it was personal. So, you know, I'll do anything, you know, to try and get an edge or get myself the next game. So that's how it became. And, you know, I think nowadays you just call it bullying, but, you know, in those days it's called cricket.
Culture's changed a lot, and you know, everywhere, you know, there used to be a lot more making fun of people and, you know, getting stuck into people. It's not, you know, it's changed now, and these new generations aren't into it, which is fine. Also, I think like cameras are everywhere, and in the last 20 years, there's so many more cameras covering cricket, so many more microphones. Shield cricket, you know, there's a lot more coverage.
You just can't get away with it, which is, I think, is a really good thing. So, you know, I think don't stop the contest. You know, it's okay to get stuck in, but, you know, do it in the right way, you know. And you know, you can really leave a lot of the talking to batting and bowling. You know, you can destroy someone, mentally disintegrate a team with your bat or with the ball. You know, it doesn't need to
be. But I don't think there's anything wrong if it's done in the right spirit in testing out someone's focus and concentration. You don't have to be personal. You don't have to attack them, but you can make jokes. You can just try and get in a bit of banter with them. But, you know, that is part of the game. Part of being a good cricketer is being able to shut all that out and focus. So I don't think there's anything wrong with it.
Yeah, it's a long day. You're out there for 6 hours. So, like, you know, besides staring into the sun, you know, if you can just niggle away at someone mentally, you know, it's bloody hard to focus and be a batter. So I always knew that, you know. So I'm like, oh, you know, are you really trusting your forward defense? Are you really thinking about that? You know, you're coming off, you know, do your homework. You're coming off 5 scores. There's a better wicket keeper batter than you just sitting in the change rooms, mate. If you don't make him here, you know, just smell the roses, mate. This is the last time you're going to play at the SCG because I'm going to blow your front knee right. You know, like just something like that just to get him thinking. I mean, it was, as I said, it was a part of my game, not a part of a lot of people. Like, you watch some of the good Aussie cricketers. Oh, sorry. That's my phone. Some players don't need to do it. You watch Paddy Cummins, I don't think he says too much, but gee whiz, you know, does he need to say anything? He just wins games with the bat and then wins them with the ball and, you know, goes about his business, and he's, you know, he's the pin-up role model of a cricketer. If I have kids one day, I'll say, watch how this guy goes about his game, because that's how I'd hope that, you know, kids would, you know, play the game in that sort of fashion.
Be like Paddy. All right, listeners, we're going to take our first break and then we'll be back with Stephen O'Keefe. You're listening to the Menas Masterclass podcast. I almost said Cricket Unfiltered. I'm Menas. I am with Stephen O'Keefe. We've been just getting into his fantastic career, hearing all sorts of stories. He's retired now. Socky, you mentioned before that your mum got you into cricket. Is that right? And where were you when you started playing?
So born in Malaysia, moved to Melbourne, then moved to Sydney
when
I was
8. Born in Malaysia because your dad was in the Army?
Army, RAF. Yeah, he's in the RAF Air Force. So went to Air Base Melbourne, Air Base Richmond. I like watching cricket, so mum got me into a cricket team at North Richmond Cricket Club, and, as I said, from the first time that I hit a ball and bowled a ball, I just fell in love with it. And, you know, I was never the most talented cricketer going around. I just developed a passion for it and, you know, played hours and hours, go down the nets, train for hours and hours. You know, started off bowling left arm, you know, fast. Well, I called it fast, and stopped growing at the age of 14. So then started bowling some off spin, you know, and I think both of them really aligned. You know, I couldn't swing the ball, couldn't spin the ball, you know, but the action just sort of suited what I did. And, you know, I was mainly a batter when I grew up playing 17s and 19s. underage cricket. It was only until I was probably 19. So was 19.
That New South? When did you come to New South Wales?
Well, New South Wales. Well, I was 8, Richmond. So Richmond, New South Wales. Okay. I played my 17s and 19s with, underage cricket for New South Wales.
Yep.
Got my first game at 20, and rookie contract at 21. 12 grand. That was my first rookie contract. Played my first game because Stuart McGill was injured for a Shield match.
I've got that here is versus Tasmania in November 2005.
Yep, that's right. Yep.
Names in the team like Phil Jakes, Simon Cadditch, Brad Haddin, and Stuart Clark. So walking into a pretty stacked lineup.
And Trevor Bayliss's coach felt so far out of my depth. I felt like I didn't belong. God, this is just, and I remember that game, Travis Burt, I think in my second over, hit me for 3 consecutive sixes. And the last one went down the tunnel and they lost the ball. And talk about good leadership. Simon Cadditch just came up, gave me a pat on the back and said, mate, you're all good. I'm going to keep bowling you all day. And he went for a 4-6, missed it. And he was my first ever first class wicket. Half volley on middle stump, didn't spin, but he was out LBW trying to hit. 6 sixes in an over. Who can blame him? Put pressure on the young kid. And then I think I bowled maybe 15 or 16 overs in the first innings, one for 60 or 70, and, sort of just had a feel for first-class cricket. Simon Case gave me a good bowl. He really looked after me, So I was fortunate that I had a good leader in him that looked after me on my debut.
Because it's good to hear that. I know sometimes I've heard from other cricketers stepping into that environment, it can not be so inviting. It can be difficult in those first few games where you try to find yourself at that level. Yeah. So Cadditch was one of those players that took you under his wing and sort of helped you.
Just really supportive, yeah. And then, it took me 4 years to get another game, but he was still captain, and then it was Matthew Mott. And I remember my second game, we played the second or third game, we played South Australia, and Josh Hazlewood broke down. I had to open the bowling against South Australia. We'd made 500 after day two. We'd made the run. So we're bowling late day two. I was none for 75 off 20 overs. I bowled my backside off and just got nowhere. And I thought, oh, God, you're just not cut out for it. And turned up the next morning and, Simon Cadditch and Matthew Mott said, mate, keep going. You're going to, you're doing a great job. This game will open up for you. We're just going to keep bowling you. And they did. And I think I got 3 wickets, at the back end of that innings, sort of 3 for 90. Then the next innings got 4, or it was 4 and 3. And Phil Hughes was playing that game. He was at first slip. He said, mate, just keep going, Bruzzy. Keep going, Bruzzy. It's going to happen. It's going to happen. And I had no belief at all that I was going to do any good or believe that, what I was doing was good enough. But, if it hadn't been for Matthew Mott and for Simon Cadditch in those early days, I wouldn't have felt like I'd belonged and my career would have looked a whole lot different. So grateful, eternally grateful for particularly Simon Cadditch for looking after me in those days.
So was that – so you're talking about that game. Was that the game where you felt at home at first-class level?
That was the first time I felt like I could do a job. And then we played South Australia at home at the SCG maybe 3 or 4 games later, and it was the first time Steve Smith had said to me, who was a mate, said, he told me, he goes, not that he didn't think much of me, but he felt like at that time he goes, you can actually bowl. And I must have been another, 3 or 4 for at that time. So maybe took another 5 or 6 games where he's like, I actually believe you can do it at this level. And that's a kid who was walking into, he hadn't played for Australia yet, but he rated me. So then all of a sudden you get this belief of all these good cricketers around you, and then you start believing yourself in it. Starts becoming its own self-fulfilling prophecy. You believe in yourself, your teammates do. So, you stick the chest out and all of a sudden, you feel like you belong, so you bowl like you belong and, success sort of comes with it.
You mentioned Smith. What's it like being in the New South Wales environment that has seen so many players come through in your time and become, you know, absolute greats of the game? Smith, Warner, Lyon, Cummins, Stark,
Hazelwood. Hazelwood, yeah. I mean,
they've all been teammates of yours.
Phil Hughes, yeah. Adam Zampa started.
It was Mikalaja.
Yeah, I mean, it's surreal, you know. Like I was captain at 27, horrible captain. You know, I didn't have belief in my own game, really just trying to find my own feet. I remember being captain at 27 and I found it really, really tough. And, you know, it's a team filled with all of these guys. You know, and I knew then that they were all really special cricketers.
Like, do you think Smith is going to be as good as he has become?
Yeah, I knew that, yeah. I mean, I guess to say the world's best batter might have been a stretch at the time.
But you knew he'd do well.
But everything, fielding, you know, batting, bowling if he applied himself. And he used to bowl. Like, we used to live together and he'd say, let's go down and have a bowl at the indoor net. So he would spend time as well working really hard on his bowling, you know, because he was originally picked to play for Australia and played a lot of T20 cricket for Australia. I think the 2012 World Cup, T20 World Cup, he was leading with wicket taker, was the leggy. So he could bowl, you know. But he was just... He's, you know, a problem solver, I guess, with the bat. You know, he just figured out ways to, you know, manufacture innings and then just craft it into the play that he is today. But I always knew that he was going to be special, and, you know, he is. New challenges now. I mean, you know, as you said, we're talking about Steve Smith, and I think as you get older, you know, as time progresses, like all good batters, you know, you miss a step, half a step, and it happens. You know, that otherwise, why wouldn't you be batting until you're 50? You know, why does Ponting and all these greats have to give the game away? At some stage, it catches up with you. It's how you challenge yourself. And I like the fact that he's going off on a tangent, but I like the fact that he stepped up and into opening the batting as like a new way of challenging. It would be easy for him to sit back at six and just, you know, cruise, I guess. But he's like, give me the opening spot. Yeah. You know, he averages 29 in six digs.
It's too early to tell.
Well, you know, some people, you know, it depends who you listen to. And
One thing quality about Smith that is underrated and not publicised much is how much of a competitor he is. It's often... talk to, you know, he doesn't outwardly show it a lot, as you know, some players, he doesn't get into the verbals, and but he is ultra competitive. I've heard stories of him, you know, being a kid and like sitting in the middle of the pitch and like not moving until he knew the score because he wanted to win the game and all sorts of stuff. Like, he's underrated, but he might be one of the most competitive cricketers going around.
Oh, I agree.
Which why I like the battle.
I think he just sort of, yeah, that's right. Competitor wants to win and wants to figure out a way to win. Yeah, that you summed it up. You know, that's Steve, and that's why he's a great captain and great leader and great player.
Yeah. So you saw Smudge a lot. Obviously, Cummins, Stark, Hazelwood didn't have to be a rocket scientist to see those three were going to be guns. What about when Lyon came up? Because your career started before Lyon, but then, you know, he came in, you know, took the first spinner spot in New South Wales, then Australia. You know, what was that like?
He came over from Adelaide, and then we went on an Aussie A trip to Zimbabwe and played Zimbabwe in white ball cricket. And he wasn't picked in a red ball. It was a red and white ball tour. We played five white ball games, Aussie A games, against Zimbabwe and South Africa. And Greg Chappell's the head selector. And, you know, Gaz was just white ball. It was just like, geez, this is amazing how he could get the ball to drop on a length, you know, get people to move out of their crease and create and still do them in the air. And then Jason Crazier was the spinner and Michael Beer, I think, with the red ball spinners picks. Nathan wasn't even picked on this A tour. And then the red ball team, I think he got selected to play a red ball game on that tour. And then Jason Crazier, I think, didn't have a great game. So then Nathan Lyon got picked, and then Nathan Lyon played against Sri Lanka and, you know, first ball of his test career.
Did Sangakkara.
Yeah, and then, you know, the rest is history. And I think he got, you know, Gaz was very green and hadn't played a lot of first-class cricket. And I think that's a credit to him because he's had to work out his game all at test level, which is bloody hard. But he got really well looked after by Michael Clarke, I think. You know, bowled him at the right times, bowled him to the tail, gave him wickets, gave him success, gave him a feel for the game. And, you know, that can't be underestimated. And, yeah, he came through and, you know, he came and played at New South Wales. And I remember telling Andrew Jones, CEO at the time, you know, he's like, well, Gaz is coming, it's going to be half you. And I said, well, AJ, my numbers are pretty good too. So, you know, you can have two spinners if you can pick them. We played a lot of games together.
Mm.
As spinners, which was great. You know, it felt like, you know, if you had to pick four bowlers, I was fortunate enough to be one of those four with Nathan on a few occasions because they, you know, rated him really highly but thought I could do a job as well. So, you know, absolute pleasure to be able to play with one of the greats, or if not the greatest off spinner that, you know, the country's ever seen. So, yeah, he's still going.
Yeah, because, you know, Warnie finished and then there was, you know, a time when Australian cricket was sort of cycling through spinners.
Mm.
You know, eventually you got to go in 2014 in the UAE.
Yep. In Dubai, yeah.
Tell me.
Yeah.
What was it like?
Dean Jones.
Dino. A great player to get it off.
Tears in my eyes. My first cricket bat was a Dean Jones Kookaburra Supreme. Had tears in my eyes. Not because I got my baggy green, but because we lost the toss. I think we bowled and, you know, it was a flat wicket.
It was so hot.
Miss Barlow, Hark, it's hot. It's Yunus Khan. I'm like, how are we going to knock these guys out? You know, and, you know, I got 100 in both innings. You know, it was just my bowling figures.
That was a bad day.
yeah, that's right. So back-to-back hundreds on my debut. Not too many bowlers can boast that. Got dropped for the second test of that tour and was really grateful that I got dropped, Menas. First time, only time I'd ever be really happy because I think Gaz went none for 270 or something. Brad Harden got injured. Dave Warner had to keep. It was so flat. We got pummeled into the dirt and Gaz went none for 270. I was like, oh, thank God I don't have to. I would not. If Gaz can't work this out, I'm not working this out. So
you came into the team then. It was, I think, Darren Lehman was the coach. The team was in a bit of transition after.
He was in a bit of transition.
Mickey Arthur and had gone in 2013. I can imagine the environment under Boof would have suited you. Like,
yeah, I think, mate. I felt like, you know, when I walked into that team, Michael Clarke in particular, they all really, you know, I felt really lucky that I had good players and they looked after me. Yeah, I'd say that, you know, I didn't feel ostracized, I didn't feel bullied, I didn't feel any of that pressure. They were all, you know, on the same page, and I just felt probably out of tune. You know, I'm so used to seeing these guys, Mitch Johnson, Peter Siddle, all playing for Australia, and you know, I kind of feel like a fraud out there, really. You know, that's
did you have to face Johnson in the nets?
Nah, never. No chance. Never. You know,
I've heard he was the bowler you wanted to avoid.
And Starkey and all of them, really. Yeah. You know, I just, I think my batting in the nets probably ended around that time, 2014, 2015. I'll just get a few throwdowns, man. There's a couple of underarms just to. Just a groove,
yeah,
a cover drive that I'll never play.
I've got some of your greatest hits from your test career here. So,
how long we got about? Yeah, well, it's only going to take you 30 seconds, but shoot.
Yeah, it's a quick segment. Well, firstly, you played two tests at the SCG, so that must have been a huge thrill. You played against the West Indies.
That was cool, man. It's a highlight. Playing, yeah, absolutely. That's the highlight really for me, was playing two home tests in my own country.
West Indies one was rained out, but then I think you probably beat Pakistan.
Pakistan we won. Yeah. So yeah.
I was at that one. I was at both of them.
Yeah, yeah. So unfortunate West Indies one, but the Pakistan was really cool because we got to play it was a winning test match, end of a series.
Warner scored 100 before lunch, I think, in that game.
Yeah. Yeah. Was that the West? One of the games he scored 100 in a session. I think it might have been the West Indies game, but then probably did it against Pakistan as well.
No, I think you're right. He scored 100 in one of those games.
Anyway.
And you talk down your batting, but you and Pete Neville batting in Sri Lanka.
Yeah, go on.
We're on fire.
Four overs, yes.
Runs in 178 deliveries at a run rate of 0.13 and over. You smashed 4 off 98 balls. Nev, 9 off 115 balls. It's at the time the slowest partnership in Test cricket. You didn't save the game.
Do we wonder why people aren't watching Test cricket? And you could almost put a focal point on that whole innings. It had been raining every evening at the same point of the test, and the rain clouds were coming in. They just must have got the remote controls out and sent them, left or right of the ground. But we were trying to bat for the draw. I tore my hamstring chasing after a ball. I probably overtrained. We played a tour match leading up to that, bowled a lot of overs.
You overtrained.
When I get nervous, I just, I'm sort of OCD, so I keep bowling and bowling and bowling and bowling and bowling. Yeah, it's sort of just like until I feel like it's coming out all right, and it never feels like it's coming out all right. So I was just overdoing it. Even in the first innings, I think I got a couple of wickets in the first innings of that Sri Lankan test. And then come off after that innings, we bowled him out for 180. I got the nets and must have bowled another 20 overs. I just, I was like, oh, it's not coming out. It's not the way that I want it. And then I took off for a ball pass mid off and, oh, God, it was horrible. I did my hammy and just felt like that was it. I'm never going to play for Australia again, and just felt like I just butchered it. Felt like I just, that was my whole opportunity. A couple of tests in Sri Lanka. The next games are all on spinning wickets. I was like, oh, if I'm going to make it, Ashton Agar in the squad, who was a quality spinner, at that stage I thought my career was done. I thought that was you've had your moment.
That's interesting. Because, I was going to say that, one of the reasons you scored so slowly was because you couldn't run. So the figures are a little bit worse than they look in that partnership. But you missed the next couple of games. Australia loses that series 3-0, so I don't think you missed too much. Yeah. You come back in 2017 for the Tour of India. Steve Smith is captain, your mate, who finally rates you. He finally rates you after all these years. He's like, this sucks again.
Yeah, finally thinks I'm worth picking, we went. Yeah. I mean, I played a tour 2016. I played an A tour. We went over there. I did okay in that. Played again. Virat Kohli played in that game. Pujara, KL Rahul. So there was a lead up to that tour, and I did all right in it. Played two Aussie A games over there and did well. And then that tour came up and got that opportunity to play in India. The first one, they just sabotaged themselves. Ravi Shastri described the wicket as having dermatitis, holes in the wicket. It was horrendous. And, everyone was spinning
12 for 70. 12 for 70.
But everyone else could spin it 3 foot. And because I don't spin the ball, minutes, I could just continually hit the stumps or challenge the stumps. I was getting LPs and balls.
Kohli played for the spin that wasn't there.
Oh, yeah, wasn't he? He was disgusted with that. When he was at the academy as a young man coming over, I used to take him to get shoes at the ASICS factory to get 50% off the shoes. And I reminded him of that because, he just signed a $50 million deal with Puma. And I said, is there any chance you can get me some Puma shoes? And he said, I'll see what I can do, Steve. But, He didn't give me any shoes, unfortunately.
Did give you his wicket.
But I left with his off stump, which was nice of him. Yeah. So I took that.
Famous win in Pune for Australia. They don't win many tests in India. You were the central figure. Tough series. I thought Australia missed a real trick in not winning that Indian series.
Yeah.
A couple of sessions with the bat, and it really cost them.
First test, we win. Second test, Gaz takes 8 for 50 when we bowl first. We have a 100-run lead. We butcher that. You know, it's so hard to get ahead of them, and we got ahead of them, and then we just couldn't quite nail it. Third test, really fighting draw at Ranchi. We dug out. So, you know, it can't be underestimated. We took them the distance. You know, it wasn't like they were too nil up and then we won a test at the end. It was 1-1 going into the fourth test. So we were, you know, right in it. And we were none for 100, I think, after the first session when we won the toss in Dharamsala. And then Kuldeep Yadav took 4 for in, you know, I think it was his debut, and just, you know, just all just went downhill. Paddy Cummins was there and he'd flown over midway through the series, and Gaz bowled well. I was just a beaten, you know, wreck, just wasn't quite getting it together, and they'd figured me out and I hadn't quite worked out how to bowl in those, you know, so slowly they got the better of me and, you know.
They stopped playing for the turn. That was their
secret. Yeah,
They did what Steve Waugh did to Anil Kumble, just play him like a medium pacer. You'll be fine.
They definitely did that, and they just Pujara, you know, Ajinkya Rahane, all those guys just worked it out really well, and you know they comprehensively beat us in the last test. But it was great because you see them back to back to back to back. There's no hiding. You know, you get to experience this 4-match test series, and I get to experience that once. You know, that's my deal. These guys get to do this who play for Australia over and over again. That's why I have so much respect for them. Is, you know, if you have a weakness, they'll exploit it, you know, and it's bloody hard to get away from it and hide from it. And, you know, that's what happened to me, and you know, I just couldn't really handle it at the end of it. But, it was great to experience.
Yeah, very close. But then you finish your test career as a hero, like not just a hero, but a superhero. You know, Australia's in Bangladesh. It's 200 degrees. It's 200 degrees. The humidity is 1,000%, and Australia gets walloped against Bangladesh in Bangladesh. Cricket Australia is in disarray. They put out the SOS to one Stephen O'Keefe. You know, Gary needs someone at the other end to hold up an end. They parachute you in, like in Normandy. You know, your dad dropped you out of a plane.
I was banned as well. Remember, Menas, I'd embarrassed and disgraced myself at a function awards night. I got banned for not playing for New South Wales for 7 games, and somehow got picked for Australia. So, how that happened, you know, I don't write the rules. It was a really awkward time for me because I was like, I've just been banned and in the paper for, you know, just bloody being a fool. And then I get picked and then everyone's into you about, you know, not deserving to be there. So I found it really awkward as well. And Jackson Byrne, who was over there to replace Josh Hazlewood, who wasn't picked, you know, he's like, well, why am I not getting a game? This guy's just flown in, who's banned. How's he even getting an opportunity? So
feel like a hero. Is that what you're telling me?
I felt like I was just embarrassed to be there, to be honest. Obviously you're not going to knock back playing for your country, but I didn't think it was going to happen. You know, I got dropped from the Australian test team and then got called in because, you know, they had an injury and needed another spinner. I just wasn't expecting it at all. I thought, you know, that's it. My international cricket career was done.
You won the test match.
It wasn't, but I'd also got myself banned for cricket, so I didn't even think this was possible. Anyway, my last memories, and I've got a shirt signed by Nathan Lyon, you know, because he had a hell of a game. I think he took 10 wickets for the test in the game that we won. So my last memories of playing for Australia is a win in the subcontinent against Bangladesh, which, you know, is bloody hard.
Not an easy feat.
So,
You brought up the ban. I wasn't going to bring it up because I'm too polite. But, I feel like...
Oh, no problem at all, Menace.
I feel like, we're almost kindred spirits in a way, Sock, because we both, wear a heart on our sleeve. We're both very passionate. And sometimes that just gets the better of us. And you add a bit of grog in there and sometimes Absolutely. You go a bit loopy.
Oh, mate, I think let's not beat around the bush. You know, I disgrace myself and, I regret, that night and, my behaviour, and it's brought about a lot of change in my life with what's going on. But, there's no excuse for ever behaving poorly, and I'm not even going to use alcohol as an excuse for that. But it was a really tough time. I insulted a lot of people on that night, and a lot of those people, and quite rightly, will never forgive me for behaving the way that I did. And I have to wear that. I think one of the things as a sports person, you you have your successes, applauded, but if you have downfalls, it's equally matched and hit for you hard. And it hit me hard because I just wasn't used to bloody getting any attention, and I got it all in the wrong ways, and rightfully so. I'm not
because it was
trying to be a victim here at all, but it was a really hard time
the Cricket New South Wales Awards.
Cricket
absolutely. New South Wales Awards. And there was also where you sprayed the bouncer in Manly and said, "Do you know who I am? I just bowled Virat Kohli."
So to say it's just a one-off would be a stretch. There's a bit of form there. If I was a racehorse, you'd say that there's a form guide you could follow.
But did it make you like reassess your relationship with alcohol? Like,
after the first time that I did it in Manly when I abused the bouncers and the police officers, I stopped drinking for 120 days to get ready for the Indian tour. And then I got back from the Indian tour and just like it felt like everything was just so pent up. I just used alcohol as a reason to just sort of, decompress and drank far too much. I was basically straight off the flight, straight into that war. I should have just never have gone, really. I should have just stayed at home and got some sleep. That's what was needed. I just didn't handle it the right way, unfortunately. I don't remember a lot of the bloody evening, which is unfortunate because what are you doing, Sock? Why are you there and why are you getting yourself in that state? It's embarrassing. But to say that the only two times that's ever happened, I'd be lying to you. I'd say, it's been times where I've, drunk to excess on a few occasions. So it's something I've had to work on, to manage, and it's been a challenge, but, I'm working on it.
Come through it.
I'm working
on it. Good. That's all we can ask for. And, I've heard, I've heard a lot of great things about you from other people that worked with you at New South Wales Cricket for a long time. A lot of great things. I don't think you'll be characterized by that, those events.
It depends who you speak to.
Yeah. That's life.
Yeah.
All right. We're going to take our final break of Cricket Unfiltered. Then we'll be back to wrap it all up.
Wrap it up, man. Let's wrap up our career.
Welcome back. You're listening to Menna's Masterclass. I'm with the great Stephen O'Keefe. We've just gone through his test career. It took 10 minutes, but it was a good 10 minutes. I want to wrap it all up. I mean, so I sort of look at your record and, so you won two Sheffield Shields with New South Wales, probably a third when you were part of the squad. You won the Big Bash three times, the first ever Big Bash. You won the, one-day domestic cup. You know, what did all those wins mean?
Mate, a lot, but not a lot. I don't know. Like, it was, I think the best wins I ever had, like Manly, we won in 2014. I think I enjoyed that just as much as any other win that I'd ever had. You know, winning first grade premiership with them. In 2012, we won the Champions League. We went away with the Sixers when we won the first BBL. You got to play in the Champions League and we got 2 weeks in South Africa. By far and away, the best cricket team we ever played with.
Yeah. Were you out with Mitch Marsh that night? Is that your fault?
It's not funny, but we were out probably longer than WA and they got ostracized and because we were winning every game, you know, we were getting applauded for our behavior. Such is the way it works.
So you win the Champions League, that's now defunct, but big win. There's still footage of a babyface Steve Smith, I think, who was skipper then.
Yeah,
you win the Shield in 13-14. That must have been really special. I think it was a drawn final.
Great moment. Yep. And and we had Nathan Lyon. You know, two photos I've got in my house. You know, that Shield winning team and the 2012. So they were probably, you know, the peak. Steve Smith came back and captained the year that we won a one day title. You know, again, used me really well. I was not really good at my one day numbers suck, but that year I had a really good year with the ball. He just, you know, North Sydney just. I don't know. You just
smashed to it. Speed. I can't remember who you beat, but you smashed them.
Yeah, in the final, and I think it was South Australia. He just, Steve as captain just got the best out of all the players. So, you know, I got to experience winning for New South Wales. I got to see a lot of young players come through. I got to play with some of the greats. You know. Second or third last Shield game, I had Pat Cummins, Josh Hazlewood, Mitchell Starc in the same team. And I was like, you know, you just sort of smell the roses a little bit and go, wow, this is so cool. You know, and I got to play with Dave Warner and, you know, all these guys. And it was just great.
You mentioned Smith's captaincy before. One regret I have is that we never saw the best of Smith's captaincy at Jets level. He struggled with the stress early on and then Sandpapergate kind of ruined it. But, you know, we're sort of seeing it now subtly in his help, you know, him helping Cummins. But it's interesting you said how good he was with you. Like, he's like a cricket genius, you know.
He is, yeah. I think Pat has done an exceptional job and I think, but you also can't steer away from the fact that I think Andrew McDonald is so good. I think, you know, Pat Cummins is so good. Steve Smith offers a bit. So I think they lean on each other in certain ways to do certain things. But, you know, there's no doubt in my mind when I played under Steve Smith, he was, you know, one or two steps ahead of the game. That was just how he thinks. He was always anticipating seeing things further. And I'm sure if Sandpapergate hadn't happened, he would be one of the finest captains of all time because he'd still be going, still doing a fine job and leading and, you know, introducing these players and, you know, but it's not lost on us. You know, you can see it. We can all see it when he's around a cricket team. He influences what's going on.
Definitely.
Yeah. So
final first class season for you, 2019-2020, you mentioned you played the last games with all those stars. That was the season New South Wales won the Shield, but COVID came, I think, before the last round.
Yeah.
Because New South Wales were leading on the table, they got the Shield. And then out of nowhere, you get axed.
Yeah.
What's wrong?
Yeah, got axed. Horrible, horrible feeling, Menas. I think, you know, it's not to – everyone goes through job changes or things happen in their life, yada, yada, yada. I think it just hit me really hard because it was just the way it was done, the fact that I thought I was going to get another year, all of these things came into play. I was a bit blindsided by it, to be honest. You know, and I felt like maybe there was another year left in me. I felt like I was struggling a little bit to do the little things, but, you know, as an older player, maybe you're giving what you get an experience you maybe not doing in the AMS or the, you know, the 2K time trials and the all that sort of stuff.
I mean, but that's what they've been saying the last 2 years about Trent Copeland and Jackson Bird and stuff. It's just they decided not to apply it to you at the time.
Well, I think, no excuses, you know. I don't like the team had standards, and that's, you know, that was the way it went. But, you know, when I look at my last, say, 4 years after that with Greg Shippard, a guy who is a great coach who understood everything that I was doing and gave me a lot of love and, you know, got the best out of me. I remember speaking to him in COVID years saying, mate, I can't do this. I'm just so flat. And he's like, mate, you've got nothing to prove. Just enjoy yourself and take your time and what do you need? And, you know, it just a great person to lean on. And I think that's what I needed at the time. And then, you know, this year in 2024, I decided to call it quits. And he's like, mate, you've had a great career. Good on you. You know, but during that time, he carried me. You know, he just had a way of, with every player, you know, 15 different players, he had a way of connecting with everyone. And I really needed that. And, you know, I didn't get it at the Blues at the time when I was, you know, 35 for whatever reason. But, you know, I just got to play under Greg and I'm so grateful that, you know, the end of my career was with the Sixers and just enjoying cricket and having a lot of fun with a great bunch of blokes and, you know, playing under Moses as a great captain and a mate and, you know, guys like Steve Smith and the internationals coming into the team and, doing
yeah, I mean, you played in 4 out of 5 Big Bash finals. Won 2, lost 2. I mean, it's a great end to your career. You know, best. Yeah. You know, I studied the Big Bash very closely. You know, the best economy rates. You know, you were the hardest to hit. And
I think out of our whole 13 years, I think the Sixers played in 7 finals, grand finals. Mm. I think I played in 6 and won 3. So we won year 1, year 9, year 10.
Yep. Lost the Scorchers the next year.
Lost the Scorchers, and then I've played 1 at Canberra and lost there. So maybe I played in 5 out of the lot. But like
that was Brett Lee's. Is that Brett Lee's last game?
That's right. Yeah, Canberra. Yeah, that was their home.
Was it Moses? If you'd taken the ball?
Michael Lum threw that ball in like an absolute rocket. He was 5 meters away. Like no, on a good day, he's not stopping that. It was just pinged into him that hard. I don't blame Moe at all. Lummy just had an absolute. I think Lummy was trying to throw the stumps down. And Moe was running into the ball, made it even worse. But, you know, great moments. T20 cricket, geez, hasn't that just lit up everything? And you're watching all these young kids get onto the stage now and it's like you're watching this game just evolve in front of your eyes. It's such a great advertisement for cricket.
Yeah, absolutely. And a great way for you to finish on top. But I will say, and I can say this, you can't. Objectively, if you look at the results after you left New South Wales, clearly they could have used a wily old spinner in there.
Well, I appreciate you saying it, Menes, but I look at the guys that have done the spinning role. So you've got Tanvir Sanga, who I think's done really well. Chris Green has been exceptional. I think he's had a really great breakout all-round year. Sure, I would have loved to have been a part of that because I felt like I probably could have added value in it at least for one more year. But that wasn't up to me. That was up to other people. However, I still think they're in good hands. And I think third is, you know, if they win that first game this year against Queensland where it's, they batted out a bloody long day there. Who was it? Nisa and whatever made big hundreds. They win that. Yeah. You know, they actually sit on top of the table. You know, they're that close.
Oh, yeah, they've bounced back. If they declared a bit earlier. Anyway.
It was tough for a while there. for them, but
I'd agree with you. Year or two too few for you, because we saw how well you were bowling. So that's kind of, we've wrapped up your career. I mean, it's littered that's with it. Wins and titles and yarns. We could probably go for another hour.
There's fines in there. There's fines everywhere. Fines,
bans. Yeah. Yes, giving people sprays. Whatever.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
I know you're moving up to the northern coast of New South Wales, and you're gonna just get into the Gunge up there. It's going to be a totally different sock. But tell me, are you going to be lost to cricket? Do you want to stay involved with the game somehow? Or you know what, what's your plan?
I don't know entirely. I think I just want to I want to go get away from it and then maybe come back to it. So a bit of separation from the game, and then just see what unfolds. I like helping people out with spin bowling. I like that part of the game. But I need to take a break from it. I've been doing it for a long time. I'm burnt out from it. I love the game, don't get me wrong, but, you know, I think
you
I
need just a refresher.
I need to focus on other things which are more important, i.e. family, i.e. Mrs., you know.
Yeah.
All that sort of stuff, which I think is important. And, mate, that's the plan. So, you know,
Do you have any hobbies? How many hobbies are you going to take up?
I'm building some houses. I like property. I like property developing. You know, I'll do that.
Good.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm just going to have a good break, I think.
Good. You know, it sounds like you've got plenty of time to come on the – you've got plenty of time to come on the podcast then.
Well, if you think I've got anything reasonable to offer, I'll absolutely come on board. But there is, let's call it 240 other professional men and women out there. I think have got far more interesting tales of tattoo manners who will get on, and you will disarm them and get the best out of them. So maybe
I'll call you in like 6 months and be like, "Oh, have you been following the T20 World Cup?" And you'll be like, "What World Cup? What are you talking about?"
I'll be like, "What sport? Cricket? What are you talking about? That was sock.
That was, you know, past. That was sock in the past."
Yeah, that's right. So, mate, I'm just gonna switch off. You know, have long service leave, as you'd like to call it, and then, mate, get back into it, you know. Listen to a bit of your cricket unfiltered, you know. Get a little bit here, a little bit there, and just, you know, but no ambitions at all. I just want to switch off. That's it.
Yeah, sounds like a typical 40-year-old midlife crisis.
I'm going to go and buy the $400,000 car. What is it? 7 divorces, all that sort of. No, that's generally what happens, don't you, when you finish sporting careers. So stay tuned. That'll be the next. That will really
the next
be
chapter.
Cricket unfiltered for Sox. So
absolutely. The next time we catch up.
You've been a pleasure to work with. You've got a great insight into cricket. I've always enjoyed listening to you. I've enjoyed your podcast. I've enjoyed our chats. So, you know, I'll continue to stay connected, by watching and listening to blokes like yourself. So, bloody been a hell of a ride, Manners. I'm glad that we got to spend some time together, and hopefully a little bit more along the way.
Well, thank you, Socky. Very kind words. A great way to finish. I will definitely be coming up to visit you on the North Coast. Don't you worry about that.
You must. You must.
I'll be growing the dreadlocks. I'll be getting into it. but great. Thanks so much for coming on and sharing, some insights into your career. It's been, fascinating, listeners. To everyone out there tuning in, thanks for downloading the show. This has been Manners Masterclass with Stephen O'Keefe, who we are now farewelling to the north coast of New South Wales and from cricket. Thank you. Thanks, Oc.
Love you, mate. Thanks, Manners.
This is a Piccolo Podcast production.
Sports Social Podcast Network.